Kristen Barnage. The other KB.
The other KB.
KB, right, and not Karen Ray either, which is, I get that a lot too. That's okay, are we going?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm going to call to order the Thursday, July 20th Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and can I get a roll call, please?
Sure thing. Member Barnage?
Here.
Member Rushing?
Here.
Member Guthrie? Member Gibson?
Here.
Member Hageman? Member Tally?
Here.
Member Riley?
Here.
Okay, it looks like we have a quorum, so we'll go ahead and get started. First, I'll open it up to public comment. Is there anyone from the audience that would like to make public comment? Seeing no one here, I will move on. And we will get right to it with the officer rotations. Item number three, this is the committee chair will be rotating from the city of Arroyo Grande to the CSA 12 representative. But that person is not here this
Correct.
Evening. Okay. So, but we should, do we have to vote on that regardless?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Here comes Marcia. Yep. Welcome, Marcia.
Hi there.
Okay, so I will entertain a motion for the rotation from Arroyo Grande to CSA 12 representative, which would be maybe at the next meeting, perhaps.
Yeah.
I will make that motion.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on that item? Okay, can we do a, David, do you want to do the vote or do I do it?
We can just have the, I think just the ayes have it.
Okay, so. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And any abstentions?
Well, I'll abstain because I have no idea
what we're voting on. That's good. I like that. Okay.
Good governance.
Motion carries.
All right, motion passes. Okay, now we're going to move on to the vice chair rotating from the city of Grover Beach to Arroyo Grande. And just for brevity, I'll go ahead and move that.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All right, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And any abstentions? Okay.
And I just wanted to make one comment.
Yes.
Daniel Rushing made it aware to me that the officer rotations were incorrect.
Oh.
And we had gotten off our rotation a little bit.
Okay.
So this is fixing it. So we will be back on track. So.
Okay. So the first agenda you sent, it was not this?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I only opened this one later. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that. Thank you, Dan. all righty. Moving on to the next item, approval of the meeting minutes. Are there any changes or any questions or comments on that agenda item? Item number four. Okay, hearing none, I will go ahead and entertain a motion for approval of those meeting minutes from March 16th, 2023.
So moved.
Okay, I have
second.
A motion and a second. Let's see, motion and second. We'll go ahead with roll call. All
sure
in
thing.
Favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? And any abstentions?
I'm going to abstain. I wasn't here.
Okay, thank
and
you
I'm
for
doing
that.
The same.
So we're going to have an abstention from Mr. Riley and Mr. Tally, and that still carries. So we'll go ahead
with good.
That.
I was looking at the names on the list. We're good.
Okay. All righty. So now we're to item number five, which is the operations report. And David, I guess you're going to take that away.
Sure thing. So I will start with the all the plant production numbers for you guys. The raw water plant production right now is 3.34 MGD. The state water flow is 2.28 MGD. The clear water reservoir, which is the produced water to the cities, is 5.62 MGD. And our downstream release currently is at 4.15 MGD. And then I can give you guys lake elevation currently is at 522.2 feet. Our capacity is at 49,040 acre feet, and we're at 99.3%. And rainfall to date as of July 1st is 0 inches.
What was, David, what was the percentage?
We're at 99.3%.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Any questions or comments on the last two, the reservoir, the storage, and the, well, it was the downstream releases, the reservoir storage?
Is the spillway still in operation at some times?
It is not. It's not, if you mean spilling currently, it is not spilling currently. I do have a date for that. I could look it up. I believe it was, I don't want to give you a wrong number, but I can look it up if you want it.
I'd appreciate it. Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I appreciate the fact that you guys have added the spillage to the website, so we could actually see when it was spilling. That was cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and per your contracts, that the way we determine that it has quit spilling is that the entire wetted perimeter of the OG has to be dry, essentially. And fortunately for you guys, the utilities department just got a new drone that has infrared on it as well, and it is very clear when you shoot it in infrared whether or not it's still flowing water or not. So it's pretty great.
That's cool. So. Okay, anyone else? Questions, comments on that? And then, David, we're still, no, you did the downstream releases.
Yep. The projected reservoir levels?
Yes.
So since it's just a graph and we didn't have a projector today, everyone, if you want to look at that on your packet and just let me know if you have any questions. The projections are looking like we'll be down around 40,000 acre feet, but not until probably about November of 2024. That assumes no rainfall. And even with the rainfall projected that we do have here, it's showing that it's a very minimal uptick. But as you guys know, this is all very based on previous rainfall data and things like that. So it'll probably take us another year or two to actually get the data that came from this last storm event to actually start affecting this this graph. So if we get a bunch of rain like we did this last year, chances are we'll likely spill again if we get another storm event like we did this last season. So,
okay. Any questions on the projected reservoir levels? Okay, then May and June monthly operations report. David, anything to, do you want to summarize that or?
You know, it just comes down to you guys' usage. I just see if anybody had questions on their usage. Everything looked pretty normal for the month. Nothing out of the ordinary. And we are, this graph or this table, we're continuing to kind of mess with it, if you will. The TAC and us have been kind of working through some of the little bugs with it, or that the data isn't quite how they want it or doesn't make sense. And so currently, like the last comment we got at the last TAC meeting was the credit to entitlement due to the spill. So during spill events, obviously the entitlement used, it doesn't go against your entitlement, but we still have to track what you're using. And so the way we're doing that is we're still accounting for it in the main table, and then we're going to give you a credit back at the end of the water year to take off all the spilled water that didn't count against you. Displaying that in a good way is just, it's kind of problematic at the moment. So we're still kind of working through those issues. So if you have any comments or recommendations on the actual operations report, definitely send it our way. We're happy to make adjustments and changes. So.
Okay, any other, before we close out that item five, questions, comments? Nope. Okay, moving on to item number six, information items. We have item A is the LAFCO notice of annexation on the Weldon property, which is attachment four in the agenda packet. So did you want to give a presentation on that?
So there was
David?
No presentation for okay. It. We can. I just wanted to discuss it with you guys. So as you might remember, I could go back and find the dates if you want me to, but this Weldon annexation has been on the books for a long time. At a Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, you guys made a vote to essentially say that you did not want to comment, and you were going to leave it up to the Board of Supervisors to make any decision with respect to this. Since then, they've been moving forward, working on their development plans and things like that. We've looked at the water system. Everything's, it's in line with what kind of water usage the entitlement that they have. There's no issues there. They have plenty of water in their contract. And LAFCO, what was kind of interesting about this petition from LAFCO is that they don't want to annex in the entirety of the property. They just want to annex in the building envelopes on the property. And apparently, I've reviewed it with county council. That is the preferred method. You don't want a bunch of land that's not, that serves no purpose. So county council agreed, and LAFCO agrees that that's the path forward. So really, I just was, and it's by petition, too, the way they went. So really, we didn't really have a say in the matter. If you go, you know, they didn't come to us and do by application, they went by petition. So they kind of cut out the board in this process. So we still see no issues with it, and it's moving forward. One of the questions that the Zone 3 TAC had was making sure that they, quote unquote, like annex into Zone 3 as well. We're looking into that currently. There's a lot of boundary updates that still need to happen in Zone 3 from, I think it's Pismo and AG have had some developments come in. So we're looking through the zone, the flood control districts, like articles that actually established, you know, the flood control district, and then in that it talks about creating zones and adding and removing area to zones. So it looks like that is just a board process and a hearing that does not go through LAFCO. And so we will be in the future, I think what we're going to do is tie the Weldon one in with the rest of the other boundary changes. So we're working on it. We're working with the tax assessor's office as well to make sure that the tax revenue with these boundary changes gets accounted for. So it's in process.
David, where is this?
The Weldon property is on Ontario Road. There's actually two parcels. I believe that there was a parent parcel way back in the day, and it got split, and the smaller parcel, I saw a map where the smaller parcel is in CSA 12, and then the larger chunk that got split off is not within CSA 12, but the entitlement of water was with that property owner. So I think it was in error in the past and should have been all included anyways. But it's on Ontario down by the, it's past, what is that, Avila Beach Drive, down where the little mobile home park is. Mm-hmm. It's right next door to that. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yep. Any questions for David on that agenda item?
Not I.
Okay, that brings us to item B under information items, which is the cloud seeding seasonal report. Ooh.
So really, you guys had brought up the cloud seeding as a future agenda item at the second to last meeting. And unfortunately, at this point, we don't have enough data to determine what the actual increase in rainfall that we got through these last storms. As you guys know, we didn't seed very much this last season. So I just wanted to provide the executive summary so you could at least see what we did do and the rainfall rates in different parts of the county. It was just kind of a nice little breakdown of how much rain we got throughout the county this last season. So, and I will reiterate, we did not seed the January 9th storm event, and then we were suspended from that point on. So.
Any questions or comments on that item, cloud seeding?
Maybe it's in here and I just didn't see it. How much are we spending on cloud seeding?
The cloud seeding program, it depends on if we're doing aerial and land-based seeding. If we do land-based only, we're somewhere around $200,000 a year. If we're doing aerial seeding, it's upwards of $300,000 to $320,000 a year. And that is splitting the plain with Santa Barbara County. So if we were doing it just ourselves with aerial, it would be closer to about $400,000, I think, or $450,000. So we do get a price break by sharing the plain. I did have some discussions. The TAC agreed to suspend seeding this next season, so we will not be seeding this next this coming winter season. And I did talk to the owner of the company, and he said that he's going to be reworking his pricing a little bit. If I don't know if you know this, but NOC was bought out by this guy, and his name's Garrett Cammons. His predecessor kind of agreed that there was this like one size fits all for cloud seeding, and he doesn't believe that's the case. And he thinks that because our program's quite a bit smaller than others, that we should be getting a little bit of a price break. The carrying costs of setting up the equipment still are kind of expensive, but he said that he thinks that moving forward, we can probably get the price down a little bit. He didn't go into what that would be, but would have some talks with me later in the year. So.
And hadn't we converted to entirely ground?
So we did the first 2 years, actually the first 3 years of our program were all ground-based, but that was only because the first year we started with aerial and ground and the pilot passed away that they were using. As you can imagine, these pilots are actually really hard to find, people that want to fly into storms. So they got a new pilot under this new contract, and so so this fourth year that we were doing it, we had aerial and ground.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
So David, so we're going to suspend it, which is looking at last year's, like December 1st to March 2024 be. Okay, so, and that's just because the reservoir's full?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll be saving that, and then we'll just reassess it after the rainy season, or hopefully the rainy season.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and the carrying costs month to month are pretty expensive, especially if you have a plane sitting on standby.
Okay.
And so I didn't want to see a situation where we just have everything grounded and we're not seating, and it's just costing a lot of money to do nothing. So
yeah, especially if we're spilling the reservoir spills.
Yeah, and I had done some projections based on usage, and I think they've kind of gone out the window because everyone's doing a really good job of conservation still. Mm-hmm. But based on your guys' typical usage and downstream releases, we should be somewhere around like 87% or something like that going into this next storm season, which I don't know. I mean, the way I see it, the ground's still kind of wet out there. We haven't got a whole lot of warm weather, so I think that this next storm season is going to fill it up pretty quick. So
should be 87% full in the reservoir.
Yes.
Is what you mean?
Yeah, okay. By around December, January.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions for David on the?
Is there any precipitation predictions for this winter?
You know, we have the ones in the projection report, which is showing max. I think it's in April-ish. They're showing like 3 inches or so. These long-range weather forecasts, there's like one webpage that we go to get them, and it's funny, all the projections out there, they talk about, El Nino and things like that, but actually we need quantifiable, like we need a number to make the graph change, and so finding someone that's actually going to publish an inch, it's really hard to find. So
it is.
So
they are talking about a very strong El Nino.
Correct.
Now.
Correct.
And so, I mean, the prediction is for above average rainfall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, we had a
La Nina. Right.
Right. We saw how that worked.
Right.
Okay, so on to C.
Yeah, the bathymetric.
I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's a bathymetric study. This is just a verbal update. So I went to the, I asked the TAC, we're going to have some savings in a couple of our projects this next, going into this next season, which we're actually in this next financial year. And I'm trying to remember what project I talked to them about. Can't remember off the top of my head. They agreed that we wouldn't be doing any budget adjustment. It would just be moving savings from one project to fund a bathymetrics study. So that's actually determining if there's any silt that's built up in the reservoir and recalculating what the capacity of the reservoir is. What that specifically does for us is all our calculations of inflow are based off of the capacity of the reservoir at different elevations. So if it's silted in by 10%, well then our calculations of what's actually coming into the reservoir will be, I don't even think it's 10% off. I think it might be a magnitude. So we really thought that it's a good time to do this after a big storm event like this. The reservoir is really full, and the bathymetric studies, they're actually, you would think it'd be better to do it when it's low, but it's actually somewhat cheaper to do it when it's full, because you're actually using sonar and other sound equipment to assess what's under the water, whereas if your lake's low, then it's a photogrammatic topo that you're doing, which takes multiple days, it's aircraft, it's those kinds of things, so it actually gets more expensive with the aircraft than it does with running a boat back and forth on the lake. So I just got confirmation from the city of SLO that they would like to do Salinas Reservoir as well, Santa Maria Lake. And so therefore we're going to get a little bit of a cost savings in the mobilization costs if they do both reservoirs at one time. So
do you know how much it is?
Yeah, so we're shooting the couple of, we've been kind of chopping at the scope a little bit. It came back really expensive, but we were also asking, in 2002, you guys did a bathymetric study on Lopez. We used all the same deliverables as that one, and it came back and it was like about $125,000 for the assessment. I was expecting it to be somewhere around 50 to 75. And so we chopped some of the scope that we don't feel is necessary at this point after having done a bathymetric study already. So we're hoping to get it down around $50,000 to $75,000 is what, after looking at the scope items, I think that's where it'll end up.
Okay. Do you have a guess as to how much silt buildup there might be?
We don't. I've heard just kind of mumblings from operators over the years that they think that by this time we should see about 10% siltation. But we also, the county has a remote operated vehicle, a little ROV camera that we put down, and we looked at, what is it, intake 7, I believe it is. And because there was always talk that that was silted in, we put the camera down there and drove the ROV, and there was no silt on it. There was nothing stacked up against the valve. So I don't know. It could be good. It could be bad. I don't know. You know, it might have more silt up by where the creeks and things come in, you know, where the intake's right down there by the dam. So, yeah, time will tell. But I would expect something about 10%.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was in 2002?
Well, they recalced it. They said the capacity was 49,388, and I believe the lake was always assumed to be 50,000 acre feet. I would have to go back and look at what the original, like, 1960s documents said.
Oh, okay.
But it was well under, you know, 10%, from what I understand. So there is probably good news to know that, you know, it's probably next, like, really, really low. So.
And is there any... anything that we would do? I mean, any mitigation for this? I mean,
you can do dredging and things, and I actually...
I wondered if you actually could.
You can. You could. Yeah. We actually had a constituent ask us about when the reservoir is really low. They asked, why aren't we out there dredging these areas? And I put together some quick calcs and showed that it would take, you know, 1,500 trucks, you know, driving in and out of there to remove anything, because they were saying increase the capacity by hundreds of acre feet, right. Was their point. And so, you know, it takes a lot of trucks to move that much dirt. So, yeah. If you were going to do a dredging operation, it'd be something like what you see out in the ocean. You'd be just sucking it and pumping it downstream into a, like, stockpiling area, you know. And so, yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to just knowing that it is, and so that you can look to the future. So if it is 10% silted up, then maybe you say, wow, that really reduced our capacity. Maybe it's something we need to look at more regularly and keep an eye on it, and then make, you know, good decisions moving forward. So at this point, with how, you know, how little it seems to be, there's really nothing to do at this point.
I mean, until we're spilling, like, I don't know, more than once or twice a decade, I think it's a big worry, right?
Right.
Okay, thank you for that, David. Let's see. We'll go on to item number 7, which is the capital projects update and attachment 6.
Yeah, and I apologize. You do not have attachment 6. I'm just realizing because of the length of the...
I have... So I think I have...
Do you have it?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did
it's
I get
at
it?
The, it's at the very, very,
the
very, very,
final
very,
two
very
pages.
End. Yeah, the final two pages, yeah.
Really?
It's
no, maybe I cut them off.
It's not printed in here because, this was so long.
Oh, yeah, but you guys got the one that was
online.
Posted, that I sent you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I posted online. Okay.
We're all good, David.
Good. The one I printed for today does not have it. So I'll run down these, and then if you guys have any questions about them, just let me know. The spillway assessment and investigation, we're developing the scope and schedule for non-destructive testing. The DSOD is still reviewing our work plan for the destructive testing. The geotechnical testing of the terminal reservoir, GEI is still working on the geotechnical engineering report for that one. As you all know, we're really waiting to get the results back from that to see if there's any seismic issues with that dam. The cathodic protection repair project, Far West is preparing all the traffic control plans for encroachment permits, and we're still waiting to do a project kickoff. That one, the rectifiers, as with a lot of electrical components, has some long, long lead times. We're talking 4 to 6 months, so we're still trying to get that that one moving forward. The CO2 injection system, that is just awaiting same thing, some electrical components. The tank's there, the skid's there. Everything's pretty much there to do the injection, except for a couple of PLCs, some real simple electronic stuff that's just long lead times. The chemical tank replacement, that was the one that you guys had all voted on the one that was leaking, the sodium hypo. We've been working through the JOC program, and as you know, I think I came to you requesting about $520,000. The JOC program's looking somewhere around $350 currently. He had to go out and rebid the tanks. The vendor that he had actually pulled their bid and said job was too small, which I was really surprised about. So they said they didn't want it, so he's rebidding the tanks. Sludge bed curtain wall, I finally have a new staff member, so that one's getting picked back up. He's developing some new scope and getting some new bids. We're looking at either installing a cutoff wall, or we potentially might reline the entire bed with a clay liner and just get it fixed for good. The membrane rack module replacement, we just got quotes back for doing another replacement rack. We do have the budget to do two, so now we're just looking at staff capacity. We might actually order all 128 modules and put 64 on the shelf and do the project one rack and then wait like about 3 months and then do a second rack. They are in solution. There's no issue with them being stored. The benefit of doing it that way is the cost of the membranes. It's a very specific plastic, I guess, and the cost of it is just going through the roof. So we thought, well, if we can secure the pricing that we're getting right now, it might be beneficial to get all 128 instead of just 64. To give you an idea, it's about $295,000 for 64 modules. When we did the replacement, the first rack, I think it was a year and a half ago, we were at $185,000. So it's gone up $110,000 for the same number of modules. So
these are reverse osmosis membranes? Yeah.
They are a microfiltration module. So it's a little different, similar kind of process, but yeah, we just push water through a tiny little tube, or through the wall of a tube, I should say. The perimeter channel repair, that is a FEMA claim. I'm still working on some plans for that. It's off in DWR's hands because they actually have an encroachment we needed an encroachment permit with DWR because the state water line actually goes around the terminal reservoir, and that's right where the damage happened. So I'm waiting to get my encroachment permit from DWR. I'll finish up the plans for that, and we'll get that work completed. And then that one's FEMA claim, so that hopefully we'll get reimbursed at, I believe it was 93% reimbursement through FEMA. And that's it for the projects. Great. Any questions?
Questions, anyone? Okay. All righty, then this takes us to future agenda items. Is there anyone who has any desire to have something put on the agenda?
Can I ask? Can I have one?
Yes, you may.
I was just asking earlier, is there any reason this meeting doesn't get moved to business hours? I was wondering why this is like one of the only commissions that our division does.
That's a great idea.
That's after hours. So yeah. I was just curious if anybody knew the reason why it was at after hours.
Maybe some of the people that used to be on it had really strict daytime jobs. Yeah. I mean, I think some of us have daytime jobs maybe, but mine's super flexible. If I know ahead of time, you know.
Yeah.
I would support changing it.
Yeah, I don't like night meetings.
I can tell you the last time that I remember talking about this, there was a vocal gentleman from Pismo Beach who wanted to keep it at this time.
Oh, okay.
And that was probably over 10, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. So he's not here.
He's not here.
Got it. as I don't hear anybody.
So we can put that on the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sounds like we have enough people that are interested.
Is it something you want me to, like, prepare? Is it something that you want to vote on at next meeting?
I mean, personally, I'm fine with voting on it if it needs to be voted on.
Okay.
I mean, we can discuss it. I don't think it needs a whole staff report and all
right.
that.
Right, right.
I mean, I think we'll just kind of talk about some options.
Need a large calendar.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
A flow
I'll bring
chart.
A large, yeah, exactly. A large calendar, and you guys can say the third Thursday at 3 o'clock works, right?
Right.
So, okay.
Do we have any thoughts on what time?
That's my, yeah.
That might be.
Are we allowed to discuss it, though, because it's not on the agenda?
Do we want to discuss it at the next one?
Yeah, I think we should.
Potential times, things like that?
Yeah.
And then we can vote on it the following one? Okay.
Well, I think we can vote on it as long as it's on
the
agenda.
Okay.
Just, like, discuss it and then vote on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Sounds good.
Great idea.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys like coming this hour, I'm fine with it. But.
Okay, if there's nothing else, we'll move on to committee member comments. Anyone have anything to share? No? Okay, wow, look at us.
I have a quick question that I think I know the answer. How are we coming along on the repair of the Chiquetti Crossing?
I don't have an update on that.
Okay. I know I've asked you this.
Yeah, you have, and I'm trying to think. I'm trying to remember if someone emailed me back about that.
I'll check in with them, but I figured since we were here and, you know.
Did I write you back on that one?
Somebody did respond. It's been a few weeks ago,
okay,
though. So
okay.
On my way home, I will go check that. But I can tell you that is extremely disruptive to those of us who live and work and farm adjacent to the Chiquetti Crossing.
Got it. Okay. Let me know if someone didn't get back to you or whatever. And
I will.
Okay, and then let's see, our next meeting is scheduled for Grover Beach, September 21st. And then other than that, I move for adjournment.
Second.
That's
all right. We're done.